One of the greatest obstacles to crafting health and wellness is identifying and controlling inflammation. It's at the core of all complex and chronic diseases. And it's the driving mechanism that underlies the most common symptoms that people like you struggle to overcome. Join us as we explore cutting-edge science and research to give you the information and tools you need to create the quality of life you want and deserve. And now, here is the host of Inflammation Nation, Dr. Stephen Noseworthy.
Hey guys, it's Dr. N back with another episode here on the Inflammation Nation. We're still talking about adrenal dysfunction, and we're in part 7 of the functional hierarchy of health. And in the last episode, I went over some general concepts of the adrenal system, concepts like how it actually is a system, and it's not just about adrenal glands or glandular tissue, and also how understanding the entire system, how it works and what affects it, is critical to understanding if your adrenals are a problem and what to do about it. We also talked a little bit about how when you do have an adrenal dysfunction, that it's always secondary to something else. And it's not enough to say, you know, hey, I've got an adrenal or a cortisol problem and just simply take supplements for that. It's also necessary to discover the stress or the stressors that are causing the adrenal dysfunction and to fix or to manage them. One of the labs that I use to assess someone's adrenal status puts this neat little graphic on their reports that helps people see what types of stressors we should consider. And there's a couple of common things we all think of when we hear the word stress, things that fall into what we might call the psycho-emotional domain. Like we all get stressed about our jobs, we get stressed about our kids or our family, the economy, our relationships, and so on. And this is all about thoughts and emotions, but stress doesn't stop there, meaning it's not constrained to just how you think and how you feel. And there are actually 3 dimensions to stress, and there's a couple of different ways of saying the same thing that are pretty easy to remember. And you may have heard some of these things. We could say that stress is physical, chemical, and emotional. It's a very common way that you might hear a natural practitioner speak about this. We could also say that stress can be physical, psychological, or physiological, just to use all P words that start with the letter P. It can also be physical, biochemical, and emotional. And you can see, obviously, these are just different variations on a theme. And indeed, they are just simply different ways of expressing the same thing, that stress isn't just about your emotions, again, how you think and how you feel. For example, physical stress can come from a broken bone. It can come from working long days on a construction site and just wearing your body down week after week. Or maybe you've just started an exercise program when you haven't exercised ever or for a while, and maybe you're doing more than you're conditioned to handle right now. These are all physical stressors that elicit similar responses in your body. But to be clear, your body doesn't really care what kind of stress you're experiencing. It responds the same way to like a broken bone as it does to a knockdown, drag-out fight with your loved one or maybe losing your job. And it responds the same way when you have a biochemical or physiological stressor, things like inflammation or infections or leaky gut or hormone imbalances and so on. One of the things that we often see with stress system activation is blood sugar issues, particularly with reactive hypoglycemic states. This is very commonly referred to as low blood sugar. And we also see adrenal dysfunction associated with abnormal sleep patterns, what we might call circadian rhythm issues, with abnormal exposures to light and dark cycles. So we can see it associated even with meal timing, like skipping meals or perhaps extending a fasting window beyond what you can manage when you don't have the metabolic flexibility to handle it. And again, in the last episode, I explained a little bit about how cortisol plays a role in blood sugar control, and that it's to assist glucagon's role in supplying additional glucose to meet energy demands of stress. And it does it by prolonging the effects of glucagon and adrenaline when stress is in play. Now, you'll often hear that cortisol increases your blood sugar levels, and it does so by driving two metabolic processes, and you've heard me talk about these before, glycogenolysis and gluconeogenesis. These are two metabolic pathways that increase blood sugar levels and therefore fuel availability by respectively breaking glycogen down into smaller glucose molecules, or perhaps with gluconeogenesis, making new glucose from other things like certain glucogenic amino acids or glycerol, which is the backbone of fatty acids. In fact, I've said this myself, right? And while these statements are true, that cortisol increases your blood sugar level through these two processes, that statement or those statements are true, but they're only mostly true. So let me explain that. If you take someone and infuse their bloodstream with cortisol by itself, not much happens to their blood sugar. But if you add cortisol, or if you add to cortisol the hormone glucagon, or the catecholamine epinephrine, which we commonly call adrenaline, then the impact on blood sugar is profound. So it's true to say that cortisol increases your blood sugar through glycogenolysis and gluconeogenesis, but that statement omits the middle truth that you have to have other things going on at the same time for this to happen. And those other things, again, are having sufficient amounts of glucagon and or, let's just call it adrenaline, in your system. Now, it just so happens that both adrenaline and glucagon are released under stress, just like cortisol is. And as long as that happens, here's how this all works together. The initial response of the adrenals to stress is to release adrenaline first, and then a few minutes later to release cortisol. And when your adrenal system does this, the adrenaline stimulates the release of glucagon from the pancreas. So we have three things going on that all work together. We have some kind of a stressor. We have the release of adrenaline as the initial response, followed by a release of cortisol, and followed again by release or the triggering of the production of glucagon. Now, glucagon is the major hormone that tells your liver to take its glycogen stores. Remember, that's stored glucose. It's a bunch of glucose molecules all tangled up together, and to snip them off into little bits and put those glucose pieces into the bloodstream. And while glucagon and adrenaline can do this all on their own, their impact on increasing blood sugar is much more profound and much more prolonged when cortisol is involved. So it seems that the role of cortisol is not to increase blood sugar directly per se, but to amplify and prolong the action of other hormones that do all the heavy lifting. And that would be, again, adrenaline and glucagon. And like everything else in the human body, we see a complex interplay of different multiple factors working together to harmonize and optimize function. And so, yes, you should still believe that cortisol increases blood sugar during times of stress, but now you know more than most healthcare practitioners do about how this works. Maybe one of the most valuable things I can do for you right now is to outline the link between adrenal dysfunction, low blood sugar, anxiety, and insomnia. And this constellation of things is perhaps the most common way that adrenal dysfunction manifests itself. And it kind of looks something like this. Imagine someone who doesn't eat enough food throughout the day, or maybe they skip meals and they're not metabolically flexible. So periodically during the day, their blood sugar drops, which then causes the adrenals to kick in to try to help bring blood sugar back up again through the mechanisms that we just described. And imagine that this someone has been like this for years and also has a family, and maybe they work a high-stress job that they don't really enjoy all that much anymore. Now, it used to be for this person in the early years that their blood sugar drop, when their blood sugar dropped, they would just get really hungry. Then they would eat, and then the hunger would go away. But over the last few years, they find themselves getting hangry instead of hungry. You know what I mean by that. Meaning that when their blood sugar drops, they actually get cranky and their brain doesn't work too well. Now, since hunger no longer works, meaning the hunger signal doesn't kick in like it used to, they start using these hangry episodes to let them know when it's time to eat. Normally, it would be, hey, it's time to eat. I get hungry. I know it's time to eat. But at some point, that system shuts off and hunger signaling becomes very inefficient. And so someone gets hangry instead of hungry. And also imagine in the last few years that they started to have trouble waking up or having trouble waking up in the middle of the night. And maybe it just started with simply waking up, being a little bit restless, but being able to fall asleep again pretty quickly. But that progressed into waking up in a very alert state. Like, hey, I may as well get up and do some chores or pay the bills or whatever. And maybe that progressed even further to, I'm really awake and it takes me forever to fall asleep. But lately, this person has realized that they're waking up and they feel like their heart is pounding out of their chest just a little bit. And they feel a little bit anxious. Now, this scenario might not necessarily be you, but I bet it describes something or maybe someone that you know. And this is usually a problem of how poor blood sugar control during the day and the night creates these nighttime waking events with a certain degree of adrenal activation. It can be a little bit complex, and to be honest, it usually takes me an hour or so to walk through all the mechanisms when I teach this to other doctors, but here it is in a nutshell. When you're awake and you're active during the day, you need to eat with a certain frequency to keep your blood sugar levels up and consistent with whatever your activities are during that day. And as long as we eat with some regularity, your body really doesn't need to ask your adrenals to make cortisol to any great extent to help keep fuel going for your body and for your brain. But when you're asleep, it's not like you are supposed to wake up every 2 hours and go to the fridge and eat to keep that fuel system going. We have nighttime systems that compensate for the fact that we're not waking up to go eat in the kitchen. So what happens is during your sleep cycles, your blood sugar dips every few hours. That's going to vary from person to person. And since you're supposed to stay asleep and not get up and go to the fridge, your brain knows, okay, I need to let the guy or the lady stay asleep. So we're going to tap into the adrenals to get a little tiny squirt of cortisol to help keep the blood sugar up. Because even though you're asleep, your body and your brain still need fuel to continue to function. So every few hours, you get this little squirt of cortisol, and as you go from, say, midnight to about 6 a.m. or so, eventually your cortisol rises enough that it wakes you up to greet the morning, right? Energetic, focused, and ready for your day. But when someone doesn't have the metabolic flexibility that allows them to, say, easily burn fat as a fuel source, if someone is running a carbohydrate-dominant diet and they skip meals or they wait too long to eat or don't eat enough food, or they fast when they shouldn't, they trigger these stress-related adrenal responses throughout the day that trains the brain to fire off stress responses the minute that it senses an energy dip. In fact, we call this negative plasticity, where the brain becomes very sensitive to fluctuations in energy supply and demand. And so with a person like this, say at night, maybe 1 or 2 in the morning, when blood sugar dips for the first time, the brain senses that, and because it's so sensitive to energy fluctuations, bam, it treats it like an energy dip, or it treats that energy dip like an energy crisis, and produces either way too much adrenaline or way too much cortisol or both, which is sufficient to wake you up. And depending on how much cortisol or adrenaline is being released, combined with the pre-existing sensitivity of the brain to stress and fuel supply issues, you can wake up either just simply restless, toss and turn for a few minutes and go back to sleep, or you can wake up with some degree of anxiety and running all the way to the other extreme of waking up in a full-blown panic attack. These are all the same problems. It's just a matter of degrees. Now, I've said this on the podcast before, and I stick to my story, that roughly 80% of the time when someone has trouble sleeping, it's because they have some dysfunction in the relationship between fuel supply, energy, and blood sugar control, combined with some degree of adrenal dysfunction. That's pretty much the take-home message. You can take it to the bank 8 out of 10 times. But remember, if you think that your adrenals are responsible for some or all of your health problems, your solution is not simply finding that perfect adrenal supplement, but more about understanding not just your psychological stressors, the obvious things that we think about, but the common or perhaps uncommon physical and physiological stressors that you might have some degree of control over. Now, I have a general rule when I work with clients one-on-one in this regard, is that at some point I want them to do an honest review of the controllable stressors in their lives and what they can change. And I would toss that over to you and have you ask yourself if there are stressors that you have control over that you can modify. And if you can, you must do that. But we all understand that life is not all under our control. And so we all have some measure of uncontrollable stressors as well. And so if you have stressors that you don't have control over, then you're really obligated to understand what your adrenal profile is, what it's doing, before you make any decisions about how to support that. Like, you know, taking XYZ adrenal supplement, and there's a bajillion out there, and lots of people are selling adrenal supplements. So I'm going to cut it off here, but in the next podcast, we're going to talk about how to accurately test your adrenals, what to do with that once you have that information. And I'll share with you a way that you can get that test done without having to go see someone like me to make it happen for you. But before I go, can I ask you to show your support for the podcast by making sure that you subscribe to the podcast? Most of you are listening on Apple. The more subscribers we have, of course, as opposed to people who just simply listen without subscribing, moves us up on the ranking so others can discover the work that we do. So please take a moment, subscribe, hit that bell to get notified when new episodes drop. So we're going to call it a wrap for this episode. Just a reminder that this podcast is an extension of my private practice where I work one-on-one with people who have complex and chronic health issues. Most of my clients have seen many other doctors without much success, and many, but not all, have some form of autoimmune issue, whether that's Hashimoto's, that's the most common one, or some other variety. But whether you have a simple or a complex case, if your goal is to figure out the root cause of your complaints and why you're starting to lose your quality of life, and if you're willing to do what it takes to get better, namely proper diagnostics, changing your diet, maybe lifestyle modification and supplementations that are personalized to you, then maybe you and I should talk. You can find a contact form on my website, which is drknowsworthy.com, or you can simply use the link that's in the contact information in the episode description. All right, guys, Dr. Ann, talk to you in the next episode.